present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with this cutting sent in by Ida Cook from Southampton and read by Brian Perkins.
An armed raider who held up a betting shop in Toxteth, Liverpool, came face to face with a policeman. He was telling staff how to deal with armed raiders.
Well, now let's meet the team. Should you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Peter Cook. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Nick Clark. Before we start round one, here's a report from the Surrey and Hampshire News.
The elderly man who caused a widespread search when he went missing from his home at Tilford last month was apparently surprised at all the fuss. According to Surrey police, he had been late home because he stopped to watch the helicopter that had been sent to look for him.
Well, thank you, Maggie Zwan from Farnham in Surrey, for sending us that. Richard, first question goes to you, as usual. Who thinks we're divided in Carey Street?
I think I can do this one. This is perhaps unusual. It's a reference to the Archbishop of Canterbury.
It is indeed.
Who's announced that he's going to retire very shortly. I don't know if you caught up with that. But he made a controversial speech, sermon, article, something or other, in which he said that we were an ordinary little nation, as if we didn't know that already. And a lot of Tories, as usual, got very hot under the collar, particularly the ones who'd recently become Roman Catholics.
It's all about the Archbishop of Canterbury, who spoke out against the inequality in Britain today. While the unemployed live in cardboard boxes, there are others who do one day's work a week and live in a palace with a free purple uniform thrown in. A spokesman explained that the Archbishop was qualified to speak because, quote, he came from Dagenham. So did the four Cortina. But we didn't expect a clapped-out old banger to tell us how the country should be run. Mind you, she probably will anyway. Peter, welcome back to the programme. Where did overlording it cause a fracas?
Good grief. I imagine my colleague Richard knows all about this.
Yeah.
I think it was...
You're even worse than me, Peter.
No, it's not possible.
It's something to do with the war, isn't it?
Come on, Richard, you do know this.
Well, it's something to do with Overlord, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, the war.
The war?
The war, yes. The war between the British football supporters and the German football supporters.
No, no.
And the war has been now cancelled.
VF Day.
Because
it's thought
we might lose.
Nick, tell us. Put us out of our misery.
It's Victory Over the Froggies Day, VF Day. Right?
That's right.
When the Canadian paratroopers have put the French to rout and recaptured their rooms in the Hotel du Golf in Deauville.
Right. Absolutely right. It's the row about hotel bookings for D-Day veterans. Their rooms were requisitioned for French VIPs and visiting American newsmen, even though they hadn't been expected to arrive for another 2 years. Nick, who has low-tax, high-speed 2020 vision?
Did you look at me then?
Yeah. I just glanced briefly in your direction.
Does the name Adam Smith strike a familiar
note? Oh, him, yes, yes. Adam Smith, the Institute.
That's right.
Dr. Madsen Pirie, the man with lots of wonderful ideas about how the world will look in 2020. I've got there at last, haven't I? Yes, he thinks that in the year 2020, we will have wild boar or wild goats or something running about. Everyone will speak French at the age of 5, and income tax will be 10 pence in the pound. And it will all be thanks to Lady Thatcher.
You're absolutely right. It is the Adam Smith Institute's vision of life in Britain in the year 2020, which includes income tax at 10%, high-speed rail travel, and divorce proceedings for the Pope, who will be fed up with her husband. Hans Christian Adam Smith would like to see wolves roaming the countryside. Most of us would be happy just to see them back in the Premier League. Also, the Institute claims that by the 21st century, the Channel Tunnel will be fully operational by the 22nd century. God bless you, madam. There's a happy shareholder there, anyway. Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
Start standing whopping, there ain't no stopping. Right past Barkingham, straight through Dagenham down to Grays Barrack, Romany and Basildon. Bitsy, famously, Adley, Liam C. Jump well, put your well, South End's the end of you. Ever go to Shoeless?
Well, that was Billy Bragg with A13 Trunk Road to the Sea. your question is, Alan, who went to see Basil, Don, Sharon and Tracy?
We had Dagenham once this evening. He's getting very famous. It's where his old sidekick. Cook's old
birthplace
sidekick.
Birthplace of Dudley Moore.
Dudley, birthplace of Dudley.
Yeah.
also the spiritual home of John Major. An American president's always managed to find somewhere in Ireland that is reasonably rural and okay, and people drink and they're quite nice and they sing rattling boy colonial songs. Unfortunately, ours goes walkabout and it's awful. I've got to be very careful here. in the wonderful, rich, broad, sunny uplands of places like Brentwood. Anyway, John Major went to Essex and a child came up to him and said, when are you going to resign? it's like those six-year-old kids that wrecked that house and they all said, what's his programme on television? I think this child's been watching Jeremy Paxman from all over the country. I mean, politicians won't be able to go out anymore. Kids will spring out and saying, but tell us, Mr. Major, speak now. do not prevaricate. Anyway, that's what happened. He went out to the estuarine swine and got as good as he gave.
Yes.
Which isn't much.
The troubled Prime Minister whipped up a frenzy of indifference, chatting about the rain in Raynham, the coal in Colchester, but in Cockfosters, he just talked a lot of the time. And the scores at the end of the first round are quite unusual, because normally it's 4-4, but on this occasion, Richard and Peter had 2, but Alan and Nick are in the lead with 5. Richard, it's your turn again. Where is building a model town child's play?
Prince Charles, isn't it?
That's right.
Yes. Is it his model town?
Yes.
In the wonderful Poundsbury, it's called.
Is it?
Well, it's where he's making his... near Dorchester, he's making his...
Ah, no, it's nearer to his mum's home.
Oh, is it? Which maybe one? He's got lots of his model towns. They're springing up all over the place. I wish I could fill you in on more details of this.
Well, it's...
but,
No. He's asking his children to build a home for his wife in Lanzarote.
That's right, yes.
And the two young princes have been sent off with spades and a certain amount of cement.
Lanzarote comes into the Hoover story, doesn't it? Is that what he's thinking of, do you think?
No, I don't know what he's thinking, frankly. I take him on trust.
In 1996, they're going to build a Legoland.
They're doing it now.
Doing a consort out of Lego. You've seen this.
Peter was talking
when
about
when my children
this.
Were small.
Isn't this exactly what I was saying?
It is.
Princess what? With a
I think you meant Legoland, though, Peter. What you were talking about.
When you said Lanzarote, were you being obscure about Legoland?
Yes, I didn't like to use the word Legover when the word Lanzarote was available.
Oh, I see. Well, you get 2 points for that because it's worth it. Just to keep you with us. It's all about the new Legoland being built in Windsor Park, which will create 600 seasonal jobs in addition to the half dozen in the castle up the road. The Lego models depict traditional London scenes of St Paul's, the Tower, and a fully working underground system. Well, it is only make-believe, after all. Peter, whose birthday match was given the red card?
Well, I think it was a decision about Mr Hitler. Having been dead for quite a while, and it was decided not to hold a football match on that day. And for the same reason, I've decided not to do any gardening on that day for fear of attracting hooligans who might dig up my daffodils and vandalise the roses. And Bert Millichip, Herr Millenchorper, as he's known, said it was very wise not to play in Berlin.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was dead. No, it came as news to me.
Well, Richard?
No. Richard didn't die in the bunker. No, I thought it was because they didn't want to upset him because he was still alive. I mean, he's 105 and enormously frail. I thought he was sort of sitting there in Argentina. He had a nasty turn during the World Cup, I mean, when England won. And probably never got over it. This extremely frail old man sitting there, terrified that England was going to win again. I thought it was out of deference to Hitler. I didn't know it's because he was dead. Doesn't it make any difference if he's dead? Won't bother him, will it?
England are trying to find dictators of Liechtenstein and Rockall so that we can prevent ourselves playing against them and keep our 100% record under Terry Venables. Yes.
I mean, couldn't we have found a dead West Indian that would have got us off the top?
It's the Football Association's decision to call off England's friendly international with Germany, which was to be played in Berlin on Hitler's birthday. The authorities feared the game would have provided a platform for extremists like the National Front, neo-Nazis and Jimmy Hill on Match of the Day. Nick, will you have a listen to this?
Those magnificent men in their flying machines, they go up to the up, up, they go down to the up, down.
I don't have to tell you that it was those magnificent men in their flying machines. The question is, who went up with his brother but fell out without him?
Well, it's Des Maloney. Now, one of the good things about this story is I've always assumed that if an aeroplane flew upside down, you'd fall out. And now at last it's proved that you do. There are two possible reasons for why this happened. One is that Des Maloney was actually an opponent of out-of-town shopping stores and he was trying to bomb Sainsbury's and just missed. And the other is he was a wonderful analogy for John Major. You know, everybody said he'd never make it. He said, you know, as he on the way down, I thought I was going to die. But when he got down there, he got up and walked away just as if nothing had happened.
Des fell out when his brother's jet was doing 250 miles an hour upside down over Essex. He explained he thought something was wrong when I noticed I wasn't in the plane anymore. He must have been a sad loss to the Observer Corps. When his parachute failed to operate, Des hoped to land on something soft and yielding, but John Major didn't get there for another 2 days. Alan, who was all at sea and crying wolf?
This is actually, you'd be surprised at this, it was actually a story about Polish television. Now, Polish television, obviously there's a bugger all on Polish television, because they gave the whole of the story 2 days ago. That was all there was on Polish television. In fact, the English Channel was shut. And the English Channel was shut, said the Poles, because a Sea Wolf missile had gone absent. And the Navy fired this thing on a practice run, and it's the only one we've got, the cuts being what they are. And it came off its string. And they can't find it.
This was the Royal Navy who started a scare by losing a Sea Wolf missile in the Channel after a launch mechanism malfunction. Apparently the milk bottle fell over. According to Polish TV, the entire sea lane had to be closed, but they didn't explain how you bring the Channel to a grinding halt. In fact, it's quite easy. You just put the word tunnel after it. The scores at the end of round two have more or less righted themselves, because Richard and Peter have now arrived at 6, but Alan and Nick are still in the lead with 9. And we start round 3 with this report from the Wisden Cricket Monthly.
Wicketkeeper Lulama Mazikkazana had to miss what would have been his first-class debut for Eastern Province recently because he had a part in the Xhosa tribe's circumcision ceremony.
I'm glad I didn't have to say that. Richard, your turn again. Who preached to a faithful few on the Vicarage Road?
We've done the old Archbishop of Canterbury.
This is another one.
And the only other ecclesiastical story this week was that the Welsh have decided that they don't want to have women priests. Has it anything to do with that?
Nope.
Oh, interesting story, though, isn't it?
It was an interesting story.
Yes, well, you won't have it in your script, I should think. You confine yourself to trivialities.
I thought it was about Watford when he said Vicarage Road.
It is. No,
it's quite clear, isn't it?
It is Watford.
Bonker. Yeah. Bonker is the word.
Bonker is the road. I'm afraid they got the ball is in their court. Off you go,
We've got ball waiting. Bonker's the word, isn't it?
That's right.
Is it Pastor Bonker?
It is.
And Pastor Bonker.
Don't start.
I think I ought to stop. It's not going to get any better, is it?
Sounds like an Italian aphrodisiac, doesn't it?
Pastor Bonker went to Vicarage Road, yes, and he preached a lot. But they were a long way away, weren't they? And none of them heard him. But they were still cured of all sorts of
cured of going to bits. That football ground again, I should think. This is all about the German evangelist Reinhard Bonker. Yes, he comes from a long line of Reinhards. Who attracted a crowd of just 1,300 to his Easter Monday service at Watford Football Club's 20,000-seater stadium. Still, a miracle did take place. Well, he doubled Watford's usual home gate for a start. Peter, here's a piece of music for you. Yes.
He's singing along with it.
Yes, indeed.
What a stirring tune.
Very moving.
Rossini's William Tell Overture. The question is, what shooting star is no longer the apple of Swiss eyes?
Well, it is a hideous shame for the Swiss to admit, but according to certain sources, William Tell did not exist, did not have a bow and arrow, and had never had a relative with an apple.
Right. So
it's
right.
A very, very, very boring story. It's almost as boring as knowing that William Tell did exist.
The researchers discovered that Switzerland didn't exist.
Hard to choose between the two.
Yes. These are the Swiss academics who claim the story of William Tell is simply an ancient myth, the equivalent of a British Labour government. The revelation could hit the tourist industry, as it now means that the most interesting thing in Switzerland is your flight call in the departure lounge of Geneva Airport. Nick, why might we be expecting our closest encounter?
Well, the Telegraph stole the best line on this, didn't it? It said, I'll remember it in a minute. It said...
That's the Telegraph for you.
Something about eating a galaxy. Mars eats a galaxy or something like that.
Milky Way.
Milky Way eats a galaxy. There's a small galaxy has approached our Milky Way and is being consumed by it. And yes. The interesting line about this was, actually, it's happening so far away that it makes... I think Brian read this, actually, in the news. It said, it'll never have any effect on any of us. And I thought, isn't that true about most of the things we hear on the news?
It's the shocking news that a previously unknown galaxy is on a collision course with our own Milky Way. Yes, at last, hope for the English cricket team, end of world, stopped play. Credit for its accidental discovery was given to a Surrey astronomer who has been searching for a comet in Woking. He should have just gone onto the high street and turned right at Dixon's. Alan, who forecast a cross-channel storm?
Forecast? This is not about lovely Sean Lloyd, who has two blokes in her life.
Indirectly, yes, it is about...
Indirectly, yes. Yeah.
It's more like the other side commenting on the show.
I'm actually getting a message from an outer galaxy, which is even now proceeding towards me. It says bonkerfish. There can't be such a thing as a bonkerfish. I would have heard about it. It says fish. Well, it's not Michael Fish. He's not having an affair with Sean Lloyd. No, he's not.
Of course he's not. And neither is anyone else.
Just shows sign language can get you into trouble, doesn't it? I think Mr. Fish thinks that some of those other weather forecast people are less accurate than he is.
I'm a fish man myself. I like him. I like his moustache.
I like Susan Charlton. I think she should have played in this match against that old bit.
It was, of course, Michael Fish who categorically denied a hurricane was about to hit southern England just hours before most of Sussex woke up to find they had a Norwegian postcode. And the scores at the end of the third round are Richard and Peter, 8, but Alan and Nick, a handsome 14. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Ardrossan and Saltcoats Herald.
Mrs. Maxwell told Kilmarnock Sheriff Court during the two-day trial she and the five others present at the party drank their way through 4 bottles of whiskey, 3 or 4 bottles of vodka, 4 bottles of Bacardi, 12 bottles of Thunderbird wine, and 24 cans of lager. In addition, she herself took approximately 20 Ativan tablets and smoked a cannabis joint. I only had one. It made me feel sick, she said.
Well, thank you, P.R. Beard of Lincoln, for sending us that. And now, Richard, will you have a listen to this?
They call me Mellow Yellow.
Quite rightly.
They call me Mellow Yellow.
Quite rightly.
They call me Mellow Yellow.
That was Mellow Yellow by Donovan, and you must listen carefully to the question. Who was driven to see red when yellow was just the ticket?
I listened very carefully indeed. Could it be a reference to the Marquis of Blandford? I wonder.
Nope.
Nope.
He did see red, though, didn't he?
Peter Cook is looking enigmatic.
I imagine it's very little to do with John Patton in Kuala Lumpur.
Almost nothing.
Almost nothing.
I think she was called Nicola Ratcliffe, and she was a reporter.
That's right.
She parked her car, as she always did, by the side of the road, because there were no yellow lines there. When she woke up in the morning, there were yellow lines under the car. This is because the council came along in the middle of the night, lifted the car, painted the yellow lines, put it back. Policeman then came along and stuck a ticket on her window. She was a bit ratty about this. It's in a place called Newmarket in Suffolk, I remember.
Right.
A place I'd always had marked on my map as somewhere you could park. Even if you were going to Birmingham, it's about as near as you can park is Newmarket. Now they've buggered that as well. So you can't park there. But she got off.
Yes.
Amazingly, the police backed down and admitted they shouldn't have lifted her car, painted lines under it, in order to stick a ticket on the window. Wonderful force we have out there.
Great. Peter, of a summer's evening, what wouldn't open off the cuff?
Well, I wouldn't call this a particularly long pause, but...
sort of picturesque.
I will put emphasis on certain words and say summer's, nudge, nudge, cuff.
Summer's.
Something to do with handcuffs.
It's something to do with... Anne Summers has decided to get out of a business venture.
She was selling kinky handcuffs in her shop.
Anne Summers went into a business not connected with sex, which was a magazine called... Anne Summers has nothing to do with sex. And she's lost a lot of money and decided she will get out of it.
No,
it's about the business she has got. But it's about another woman who's probably a friend of various Tory backbenchers. Anyway, she went into Anne Summers' supermarket and bought a pair of handcuffs. And then went home for a party, which involved putting her hands in the handcuffs. And after she put her hands in the handcuffs, she couldn't get them out again. I thought this is why you bought them, but anyway, she had to be released by firemen. Now, there's a lot of overtones in words like release and fireman and all the rest. Anyway, the firemen came round and did what they had to do to this woman to get her out of her handcuffs.
It's about an Essex housewife who prefers to remain anonymous, so all we'll say that she's Scottish, 30, and if you live in Basildon, her house is the one with all the emergency services outside last Tuesday. Nick, where might you buy a jumbo-sized egg?
The Isle of Wight?
Could well be, but,
It's one of these...
You're not a dinosaur in the Isle of Wight country here, are we?
We are in large creatures.
I think
hands are raised.
I think in these unusual circumstances, I should give a visual description of what's happened here.
Yeah.
Is that Mr. Ingrams and Mr. Cook both have their hands raised, not, I think, to get an Anne Summers handcuff onto them, but in order to take part in this question. Are we going to let them do that?
Yeah.
Go on, then, off you go.
Off you go, chaps.
Richard, this is one for you. The huge...
Well, yes, the huge Madagascan elephant bird. The egg is going to be auctioned.
Yes.
At Sotheby's or one of those places.
Of which there are only three in private ownership.
I think Auburn Waugh is going to bid for it. He's very, very keen on this egg.
The rest are nationalised.
Bron Waugh wrote in the Telegraph that he really coveted this egg more than anything
They'll
else.
They'll go about £30,000. Okay. One egg.
She refers to the largest egg ever laid, which was auctioned at Bonham's. The giant 3-by-1-foot egg was laid by the great elephant bird, which was famed for having beautiful plumage, bow legs, and tears in its eyes. Alan, what blooming idea gave food for religious thought?
Do you want to
this is not the portable garden.
Nope.
There's a garden you can roll up and roll out again. And well, yes, I want a bit of...
Well, they put their hands up last time. We can't let them do it again.
We can't.
It's daffodils, isn't it?
It is.
It's the vicar who decided that to make a point, and I must admit, I never read far enough down the story to work out what the point was, but in a sermon, he grabbed from the pulpit vase a bunch of daffodils and stuffed them down him and suffered a severe bout of something unpleasant the following morning. They didn't agree with him.
It's all about a vicar called Ian Gooding, who became ill after trying to demonstrate that we can eat almost anything by taking a mouthful of daffodil during his service. And now, I say, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team brought along. Richard, have you got a cutting?
I have something from the Edinburgh Evening News,
Barry. Oh, good.
It says, a thief who began sniffing glue he was stealing from a shop in the Brazilian city of Belo Horizonte collapsed when he was overcome by the fumes, upset a tank of the adhesive, and stuck himself to the floor.
Peter.
This is from the Dundee Courier and Advertiser. Following today's opening of the Brechin bypass, motorists will be able to drive from Aberdeen to Istanbul by either dual carriageway or motorway.
Doesn't say why they would want to, does it?
No, that's it.
Right, lovely. Nick.
I got mine from the Mail on Sunday, which comments that senior clergymen have banned three sculptures from a cathedral exhibition because they are considered too rude. Cathedral spokesman Canon Walker said, "You have to bear in mind what the public might feel."
Alan, what have you brought us?
Well, mine is brought, Barry, from the Lancashire Evening Post. It says, in July 1988, after being out of work for over 2 years, Preston warehouseman Derek Stanley decided to have Margaret Thatcher's face tattooed on his right buttock. But the former Prime Minister has had the last laugh. Over the past 5 years, Mr. Stanley has lost so much weight that the portrait has become unrecognisable.
Oh, dear. Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Well, they're interesting up to a point, because Richard and Peter have 9, but Alan and Nick have doubled that with 18. This week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Guardian, sent in by C. Tippett of Swindon.
When PC John Bailiff turned up at Wareham Police Station, Dorset, with a prisoner, he was asked by superiors for evidence to prove the suspect had driven while disqualified. Simple, came the reply. He gave me a lift to the station.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram.